This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
All right, well, good morning to all. And one last call here, just to be sure that you're not disappointed. This is Habits for Effective Teachers. And so if you were looking for a different breakout, I won't be offended. But you need to find another room in that case. All right, I'm Melvin, Mr. Lehman, known as Mr. Lehman here, but glad you're here. We'll be spending some time with Habits of Effective Teachers. I just told somebody outside the door, I'm not quite sure what they are, but we'll talk about a few here as we move along. But before we do that, let's pray. Father in heaven, pause here just a moment and lift our hearts and minds and souls to you, just confessing that every one of us in this room, we're human. We make mistakes. We are creatures of habit. You've taught us. You've given us commandment. Forgive us for being so foolish. Forgive us for being so weak. But help us to align ourselves with the work and life and example of Christ, take on his habits and characteristics, give wisdom today as we share with each other. I pray it in Christ. Amen. All right, you have a handout. I'll begin with a picture. I don't often necessarily like to show a picture of myself, but I have a reason for it. This is my wife Sheila and me. This for you Canadians. Do you recognize anybody from Canada? Location is?
No idea.
Location is?
Somewhere.
Say again?
I don't know.
Yeah, Prince Edward Island. But more importantly, a book you probably read.
Anne
of Green Gables. And the Lane?
Oh.
Lover's Lane. It's our 40th anniversary. My wife claims that this was the first time since our honeymoon that we went somewhere and I had no assignments. I was not going to speak. I was not going to stop off and talk to somebody. I was not going to do any of that. I was just going for, she and I, we're just going for 2 weeks to do nothing else but enjoy the island and each other. Why do I say that? First habit. Find some space in your life besides teaching. Kidding just a little bit. What most of you probably would not know is that along about 55 years of age, I did not have what you call your typical burnout collapse, but I experienced the things that you feel when all of a sudden you've had it. It's like just right up to here, okay? And it was at that point that I made some changes. I dropped the administrator responsibility here at Faith Builders, and you know what? Life became more enjoyable. So that was just extras for today. That's a habit to remember. So this was a great time for Sheila and me, and I like to talk about it as that. And would recommend that. Now I've been recommending to my sons when they get married, I say, okay, or any young fellow, say, live with a lady for 40 years and then go to Prince Edward Island. I'll make sure you go to Lover's Lane. It's a great place. Okay, so where do we head here today? I gave this discussion up in the chapel here a little earlier. I have three pieces here that I would like to actually talk with you about. Few things that I've learned along the ways. My experience will not match your experience perfectly by any means, nor yours mine. For that reason, I would like to get about two pieces here that are important for you to understand here right to begin with. I noticed some Franchoff here, some family, so I have to be careful what I say. I might get myself into some trouble here. My first question that I'd like to grapple with a little bit is, why is habit building so difficult anyway? Oh, what's the issue there? And I'll talk about it here in a few minutes. So we're going to spend some time there. I'm going to try not to derail too much because I do borrow some of the work that I do with Life and Leadership for Men here and sort of pitch it in to this discussion for teachers. But I'll try to be careful to keep it focused there. Second part is 7 teacher habits of life. If you look on your outline, you'll see on the back of it. I actually added some 4 or 5. What did I add there? Five. And those are attitude habits. And I'd like to spend significant time there. Hopefully, I try to be punctual here. I save some space and time there for group discussion. And it is for you to give some feedback or questions, answers on actually what I'd like to hear you talk about is a bit about your experience. So the first slide here that you see is, I call this crossing the bridge. And if on your outline I left some spaces there, on the left-hand side of the bridge are ideals. On the right-hand side of the bridge is habits of life. And you can see the issue that we're looking at here is how do we get across the bridge. My discovery about human nature. This is about me, about myself. It's about students I have had over the years. It's almost everybody I have known. Both large and small, great and not so great, all of that. The problem is the bridge. It's not ideals. If we had the time to do this, it would be really neat just to go around here and ask each of you to name one habit that you wish you had that sort of eludes you, particularly in the classroom or maybe just personal. Maybe just push the pause button here a moment, let you think. And if you want to, even write on your piece of paper, here's a habit I wish I had, but it feels like I don't. Just give you a moment to think about that. My obvious question is, why is it not a habit, if you want it to be? Why has it not become a life habit, whether it's in the classroom or personally? I'm not throwing any stones. I'm not finding fault with anybody. Been there, done that, know what it feels like to want to head in a direction and feel like I don't have the tools to get there. Okay, so really this first section is talking about that issue a bit. How do I achieve habits of life? How do I get across the bridge? Ideals to habits. And remember, the problem, particularly with a choir like this is a group of people I know. I know if you're teaching school, you're not people who were trying to get off of drugs or something like that. At least I don't suspect so. Okay. I suspect your ideals are really, really good. What has amazed me over the years is even people who were not raised in Christian homes, their ideals typically are not that bad. Did prison work when I lived in Chambersburg, where I grew up for about 16 years. I had criminals live with us on occasion. And interaction with those people over the years, I never heard one of them actually offer these 3 bad things that I wish my son would become or be. They always had pretty good ones. If you pushed them a little bit, what would you like to see your son grow up to be? And they're good. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is not ideals. The problem is the bridge. Okay? And that's what I would like to talk with you here for just a bit. But continuing here, I want to be very, very clear. I'm not talking about some method where you can just pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, where you can just push a button and life changes. I need help, you need help. All of us need help. And I don't mean to just be somehow pious here. I really mean to push at you. We really do need to learn how to repent. Change in life, you realize, almost real change, significant change, almost always comes in tandem with something we are repenting of. Okay, so I'm repenting of this and changing to this. And I don't need to tell you this, but until one gets it, that I'm off tune here, it's hard to get onto. Okay, so, and I'm just making very, very clear here, what I'm about to share with you in this next 10 minutes or so is not a pull yourself up by your own bootstraps method. We need the help of the Lord. Notice the bridge is supported by the work of Christ and by the attitude changes that come when we find a place of repentance. I would also use another old word here that helps us across this bridge and that I just don't want to avoid. The word's obedience. Again, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I'll tell you what I really lament about the present generation. And I'm talking about, I see young families raising children, actually both in Christian homes and non-Christian homes. And I wonder where we're getting to here if we don't have a good sense of knowing what just that old word, obedience, actually following instructions. It's hard to get across this bridge if you don't have that in your toolbox, that sense of, well, when I get it, I do know how to obey. Okay, well, I won't go off on the lament about this generation, but it's a problem. And it really, really is like a huge block right at the left-hand side there of the bridge. Now, what I have thought about a little bit over the years is why is it hard to form a habit? Why is it difficult to get across here? And thinking about it from the standpoint of, well, what habits have I actually been able to envision and then find a way to get across the bridge? And why did I actually cross the bridge on that one? Say this is on diet or whatever it may be. Well, these might sound a little negative, and this one is a little negative, but one should not forget. Fear of God, that's very biblical. Fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Fear of man, fear of failure. Fascinating thing is, those of you who know me know that I'm forever saying that, well, you know, if you're a Christian because you're afraid of hell only, you'd be a generally anemic Christian. Okay, didn't say you're not Christian, just said it's generally, it's weak. If it's out of fear. But it's better to be a Christian out of fear than not to be a Christian at all. So in other words, well, if it's a fear of hell that pushes people across the bridge, well, okay. That's one motivator. Fear is. Fear of failure, I'll bet you a nickel that most of you at least entertained that on occasion. Classroom. Okay. How's this going to go? it can be debilitating. Here's why I always say it. Fear that is debilitating, you have to come to terms with it. Fear that is motivating is not all that bad. It's actually pushing you to do things you maybe wouldn't ordinarily do. Okay? It's not my main point here, but I'm just saying don't count it out. The truth is that most of us, we wrestle with that fear of failure. I know you don't believe this, but can you believe that I'm just a little bit frightened about being here this morning? Well, yes, I am. A little more comfortable than what I used to be, yes. But that little bit of fear about I'm going to stand up in front of people and talk and try to share something, that little bit of fear did push me to do some work. Did push me to, okay, my habits of study kicked in, my habits of research kicked in, my habits of organization began to kick in, and it all gets pushed. What am I saying to you? Well, don't be afraid to take some responsibility on. It pushes you. It generally, there's a little fear involved, but it's not all bad. Again, not my main point. The next one is the one I'd like for you to get for sure. Of course, when life is working the way it should, it seems to me, the real push behind the ideals and the push across the bridge toward habits of life lies somewhere deeply embedded in our vision and our values. what we really, really, really care about. Okay, I'll talk about one that's just not even spiritual for me, but it's one that I do. Okay, so I do a little bit of running, a little bit of jogging, a little long distance running, not a whole lot, but some. It's for my health primarily. I won't go into the details about that, except to say this. I had Crohn's disease about, oh boy, I had it in my early 30s, and then it came back in my 50s. And you remember that picture there of that Prince Edward Island? So there I was, 59 years old. And before that, my sons had gotten into some long distance running, and they said, "Dad, you know what? You should try running again." And I said, "You're crazy." The second time I got Crohn's disease, I had fierce arthritic pain in my hips. Never had had that before, but I did, and I said, "Well, you're crazy. I'll be crawling." But anyway, while we were on our trip to Prince Edward Island, I said to Sheila, I said, "Well, what would it hurt? I mean, I could sleep all day today if I need to." You know? So I went out and started. I don't know if I jogged a half a mile or a mile or whatever it was there that first time around. And the next day I got up and thought, "Man, you know, I feel a little better." It wasn't that I was feeling terrible even. It was just that, So if you do something and it works a little bit, you know, you run a little bit more. So I kept doing that, and I won't tell you how many miles I got up to, but the more miles I ran, the better I felt. And I'm like, really? But the actual habit of getting up in time in the morning, first of all, to actually carry through with a regimen that would get me ready to run a half marathon, it takes some doing. But there was, you see the push behind it, all of a sudden there was some value in it for me. Vision, and then a little vision. And then now that begins to push the habit. Now I just used a relatively trivial one to illustrate to you what I mean when I say if there's vision and value behind the ideal, you up the chances a whole lot that you're actually going to get across that bridge. Okay, and I think that's I found it to be very, very important. I don't want to get stuck there. You know, when I'm teaching life and leadership for men, of course, so we spend a lot of time. We stop right there. They're writing essays and a whole lot of other things to think about these issues. I'll let you take this thing and think about it a little bit, particularly in respect to our subject, habits of effective teachers. What are those habits? We'll be talking about a few here after a bit. And then to remember there's a bridge. It's not enough just to know the habit. What we really want to do is have it become a part of our teaching regime, the way we do things, regimen. So, this is a... Okay, you don't need all of this, but let me explain, first of all, that if you were to number these slides as they're given there, they would be numbered a little bit like this. So you have the front side of the page here, 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Five, six, seven, eight. Now, perhaps it doesn't seem important to you except this. What I do here with slides, between slides 3 and 6, is we keep going a step deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So what's behind what? Okay. So a lot of ways, the fundamental issue is here. Okay. So I'm beginning at the top end and going backward a little bit to get down to what I think is one of the fundamental issues. Now, we're talking about habits for effective teachers, and I'm wanting to push you on those habits. However, what I'm about to share with you would actually be helpful in your training of students in the classroom beyond this math lesson or whatever. These are some of the pieces I use, and I'm teaching, at least in the back of my mind, when I'm teaching a classroom, what is it that I want Johnny to become? Where do I want to push it? Sally or whoever. Okay. And boy, I tell you what, I know if I can affect vision and value, even if they don't get this algebra 1 and 2, if they don't get that, if at the end of the day I have changed, I have actually affected their values in particular, they'll change. that's an effective teacher. If you can touch the values of a youngster and actually just push them in some good directions. In fact, I have come to believe that if I get the world history lesson taught, that's a good thing, and there's content there, and those of you who've had me know that I love to teach history, and I'm going to push you in content, for sure. Okay? But behind it all, what I really am after is the change of values, the actual change there. So some of this is, it's dual-purposed. You can think about it as a teacher, and you can think about it as how you can affect students. Okay, so let's take a little look here. So I'll go through these here. The right hand, this piece over here is relatively unimportant for the discussion here, because I use this otherwise, okay? I want you to see the vision thing, though, right here, okay? Just so you would understand and maybe explain a little bit where I'm headed with our time together here. So if one has vision for a classroom or whatever, well, when I'm talking to young men who have a lot of vim and vigor, I'm trying to get them to see something. Look, it's one thing to have vision. It's quite another thing to actually have that vision transformed or translated into a reality. It actually becomes something. A lot of people have a lot of vision or have vision, but the translation. So that's what this really is about here. So you see those boring terms, organization, management, interpersonal, and all this stuff over here. And there are a lot of habits that belong here. So, for example, I'm not going to be talking about the habit of organization this morning. And Sheila would say, for good reason. Because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Actually, I've worked on it over the years. But so there are habits here that would apply across here for sure that we could talk about. I'm not going to be talking about those this morning much. Those are classroom management habits. Okay? Classroom management habits are a little different than where I'm headed here with this discussion. You did not hear me say they're not important. They surely are. but I'm looking for some of the habits behind the habits. What are the ones that drive it? Okay. So that's why I'm not going to say much about it. But do see the word vision there. I grew up as a young man hearing preacher after preacher talking, well, you know, without vision you perish. And vision is everything. It is. But listen to me. Vision does not just appear out of thin air. It isn't just something that all one day I dreamed it up. So what's behind that? Well, I've come to believe the values is the vision behind the vision. So I'll just put these all up here and you can fill in a few things if you want to, and I'll talk about this one just a bit. But the main piece to see here is the values. Okay, so where am I at here? What slide am I on? Like about whoever it is.
Four.
Okay, so here I have values. And here, vision are the big words I want you to see. So we're going deeper, okay? Talking a little bit about values and saying that, well, vision grows out of values. And again, if I were explaining this or talking to the folks in my leadership, life and leadership or mid class, I would say over here that, well, some of you are deeply interested in children's ministries. That grows out of some pretty deeply embedded values. When I was growing up, prison ministry was a big thing. Very few people talked about kids' clubs and that type of thing. That was not on the page. Prison ministry was. Okay, but much of that grew out of values over here. Here's some pieces that are worth looking at that I have found very valuable for myself. Because the things that you hold very, very, very valuable. Now remember, this can apply to you as a teacher, or you can talk to your students about this sometime if you want to. The things that you hold very, very, very valuable, you might say your core values, actually they come from different streams, and it's good to know what stream they come from. So for example, I just have three of them here. So culture-driven values. I'm not even thinking necessarily of Mennonite culture now. So I think most of us come from both a broad Western culture and a narrower subculture of Anabaptist in some flavor. I'm not necessarily talking about those, although they certainly apply. When you're talking about culturally driven values, it means it's what everybody does. An example I give, if you come by my place, let's see, Kayla, you're up there right now. I mow my grass. I take care of my property. I have 60 acres around that, and we have a beaver pond. Some of you may have been there. I don't remember. Anybody there hear this? Okay, some of you were up there. Now, look, I'm not stupid. The way I care for my property is largely culturally driven. Okay? If I have a friend in Poland. His name is Jan Wieniawski. And Jan thinks that it's the craziest thing ever that people would have a lawn, maybe a half an acre or a quarter of an acre, clip it off, and then next week clip it off again. And the next week, clip it off again. And the next week, put some fertilizer on it so it grows faster so that they can clip it off more. He's like, duh, what is your problem? He's an older Polish man. And, in his front yard, he grows tomatoes and he grows onions. And it's just this really, in many ways, it's just neat. Values. For him, certain values are driving what he's doing. For me, it's culturally derived. I hope you hear me not trying to make that holy, but me admitting, if I know that it's culturally driven, okay, and not some principle that came out of heaven itself, to actually get this lawn cleaned up this way, although there's this sense about being orderly and proper and all of that. I mean, I go along with that notion. But the primary drivenness here is cultural. I'm telling you. I'm admitting it to you. Okay? It's helpful if we know that. And don't try to defend it in some other fashion. Just simply say, well, that is the way we do it around here. And if I didn't do that, my neighbors would think I'm an idiot. And of course, it might even affect my testimony. I don't know if it would or not. But I'm just saying there are those issues, I know. But it's still culturally driven. That's why I'm doing it. Principle driven. Again, should dwell more on this one, but clearly these are the purest ones. The ones that are derived from timeless principle. Frugality so that I may have to give is principle-driven value. And then habits, you see how habits of life flow out of that. If I really believe that, and if I really hold to it, well, then there are going to be certain ways I handle my money that might be quite different than my neighbor. That's principle driven. Okay? Or the last one, for those of you teaching high school, remember it for yourself to begin with. And then here's one you can think about in terms of teaching a young man and ladies who are coming to maturity. Hero-driven values are really hard to combat if you don't like them. You can teach till you're blue in the face. I'm also a pastor, and you can preach till you're purple in your face. In the end, a young man he lives primarily out of the values that he derives from his heroes, whoever they are. Which is why it is so important that they don't get so off track onto some popular sports hero or something like that. And become so fascinated there, because I'm telling you, as sure as I'm standing here, that a young man, a young lady's values flow out primarily, as a young person particularly, primarily flow out of whoever their heroes are, whoever they look up to. And if you can touch that and you can affect that, you'll affect their values. And if you can affect their values, you'll affect them as a person, for sure. Now think about it for yourself too, and I know it doesn't quite apply to our subject this morning, but you can just think about it broadly. You tend to mimic and hold the values of people you admire. And hopefully those are good people. We follow Christ, not people, but we do admire people. We respect them. And as we do, we adopt their values. Now, here's my point. If a habit that you're wanting to develop cannot be connected to a pretty strongly held value, okay, you'll have trouble getting across that bridge. The higher the value is, the more likely you'll actually say, okay, this is going to be tough going, but I'm going across because this is important to me, okay? So consider that if you're struggling with a habit that you really want to bring into your experience, ask yourself this question. What is the value that lies behind this habit that I am wanting to develop? And if it's weak there, you'll have weak impetus to be pushed across the bridge. Okay? So just for you to consider. Now let me go on, because I don't want to spend all my time here. You can see that I have something even before values. And again, I'll just put these all up because you can see where I'm headed with this. You have story. Think about this. I know very few children who do not like stories, either like them read to them or told to them. Either way, my grandchildren will sit for hours on the sofa and listen to stories that that we have. They're either in book form or we tell or whatever. Speaking of how you spend your money, I did think about this one. So if you came to our house, you would see a bookshelf that I built especially for Sheila and especially for children's books, because she loves to collect children's books. And she has, I have no idea how many there are. There's a whole lot of them, and there's a truckload of money in it too. But I told her early on, I care about that. I don't have money for a lot of things, but I have money for books. I have money for good books. And we might not be going out for supper on Friday evening, but that doesn't matter one bit. Buy those books. If you see a good one, buy them. And we'll be somewhere. Of all things, we become antiquers. Well, we're antique ourselves, but anyway. But what we go to an antique store, and she goes immediately to the children. If they have a children's book section, she goes there, or she goes to a thrift store. She's going through those. Why? We highly value it. It's a habit for her to go immediately first to the books. Well, why? Well, because we place high value there. That's translated now into stories that my children read, that now my grandchildren are reading. And what I know is that forms the imagination, particularly the heroes that are there. So I'd even push at you a little bit. I don't want all you ladies read. I see some of the books that folks read, and I'm like, so who's the hero in that book? And just exactly what characteristics do they have that I would wish my son has or I would wish my daughter has? Because that whoever the hero is, it'll make a difference there. So you see heroes, values, passion. And notice what we really are after as teachers is, in fact, impact. The people you know that have the most impact are passionate people in whatever area they're in. It doesn't mean they're glamorous, but they're passionate. They deeply, deeply, deeply care. Why do they deeply, deeply care? Because of a value system. The values that they have. That's what all that flowed out and all that. So you can see the connections there. I don't need to make them. I think I do have just a little bit more on this. In the next slide, it just unpacks that just a tad bit. So this is vision, values, story. And culture I have here too. I don't want to say a whole lot about those, but both of these affect things. And here maybe in this next one, I'll just outline this just a little bit again to pique your imagination and your thought on this, particularly when you're thinking about teaching your students. So if you're looking at the observed culture there, a young man, young lady, yourself, pop culture or church family culture? And today, pop culture standing for popular culture, the stuff that's really, the YouTubers, all the stuff. Won't go into the details here, okay? And church family culture. Let's just face it. You feel some tension there, and so do your students. They just feel that pressure. And I break out the pop culture into secular pop culture and Christian pop culture because they both exist. And so the typical young person I know anymore, particularly if they're kind of from a family that's sort of into, they've got their finger on what's happening around, they're feeling tension between secular pop culture, Christian pop culture, and the culture they experience at church. They feel pushed and pulled there. And what I'm telling you is you might even feel some of those pressures. But that all rests. It goes back. It begins to affect value systems. That's what stands behind these values. You can see it better in story. Notice I list a couple stories up here. So the Bible, Robin Hood. Why do I list Robin Hood here? How many of you read it? Okay. What tension do you feel there? The hero of the story is? Say again?
He's a thief.
He's a thief. And why are we a little confused about this hero? Well, because Robin Hood robs the rich to give to the poor, and there's something that sounds right about that, but there's also something that we say, well, I just wouldn't exactly be all that happy if Jordan did that. That's easy, my son. Now listen, Robin Hood's a great story. I read it, and I don't mind people reading it. That's not my point. My point is, you have a hero that is going to produce a little tension there. Okay, that for any thinking person, they're going to feel that push and pull about this hero. And you can see Ben-Hur, same tension. You feel that there. Dirk Willems, the tension leaves. It's kind of like, I'm all in for my son being like Dirk Willems and holding him as a hero and the values that come along with it. Okay, just giving a few things there to illustrate what I'm talking about. If you have questions about that later, we'll come back to it, but I will be out of time here quickly if I don't hasten on. Let's go to some habits. These are some that, there's life habits that I do mostly. When I say I do mostly, I mean they work for me. I have big flaws. There are lots of catches in this, so don't hear me giving you any kind of pure. This is what I do all the time. But these are the ones that work for me and help me a lot. So, first one is to put first things first. And you've heard that one before. Why, that's in any good playbook that's about being Christian. Put first things first. But think a couple of times about it. The truth is in the nuances. We're always looking for the one piece that we can hit and that'll solve it. And that's not what you do with putting first things first. Putting first things first really is, it's all the messiness of life sorted through kind of, and pieces pulled out and set at their place what they need to be, and really just in very, very small ways. Brother John over here is talking about Christians, you know, the media thing. Okay, pay attention there. What I know is there's no sermon that is really going to fix this for our young people or for myself. If we're going to accept the phones and all the other stuff that goes along with that, it's going to become a part of our machinery. Then we have to do the hard work of this habit thing, building the habits that really create first things first. Okay? So an example in our home, I had a little trouble, Patrick, by the time Jordan was leaving home at 23 years of age doing this. But we just always insisted that the boys do their computer stuff downstairs. Well, why? Well, yes. Pornography. That really wasn't our primary reason. Our primary reason is we do want family to be together. And why would there be? I want them to have the habit of everything's transparent. It's out in the open. We're not hiding anything. Okay. And so here's what they're sitting there working on their computer or whatever, and I'm sitting over there, maybe even looking at my computer. Who knows? But we're all there in a room. Okay. That's a little piece. My own personal computer habits. You saw the picture, right? Of my wife. That's the picture that always comes up. So I just want that picture right there. And every time I open my computer, pow, it's right there. It doesn't matter if I'm in Timbuktu or where. I see the image of Sheila and me on Lover's Lane. And it's an automatic little push, okay, to avoid certain things and embrace others. Next thing I do is I go to, this is in the morning now, not every time I open my computer, but in the morning, I go to my Bible program. I already told you, don't hear me talking about being some kind of holy somebody. It's just the pieces of work. I go to my Bible program, I read a passage, I maybe work on some memory that I'm working on or something, spend maybe 10, 15 minutes there, something like that. Next thing I do is I go to Outlook. I go to Outlook to see if anybody's trying to get a hold of me, which I was really glad I did that this morning because Matthew changed the class meeting place to here. And don't you know, I immediately went into scramble mode to get down here and try to connect, and I couldn't connect. Okay, I was glad I looked at Outlook. Put first things first, yeah. Then I go to my to that part of Outlook that is a scheduler, right? And ask myself, okay, I have this and this and this. I should call Sam, and I should do this, and I should do that, and I should do the other thing. I've got, you know, 2, 3, 4 things in there. I immediately ask myself the question, what should come first? Now, I'll give you a little hint. Here's what one of the rules of thumb that I use. Don't always do it, but one of my rules of thumb is which one of these is the one that I am not looking forward to, I do not want to do. If I can possibly avoid it, I will. I put that one to the top. How many of you, has this ever happened to you? There's a phone call you needed to make or whatever, you know, and you did not want to make that thing. I always say it this way. I have a million excuses as to why I cannot make that phone call right now. You know, I need to do this and do that. I got all the reasons you can think of. And then if I do happen to can't run out of them at a cost, I sure hope he's not home. Well, put it to the top. Here's my point. How many of you have had an experience of when you actually do that and you make that phone call or whatever that other job was that you did not want to do, and you get it out of the way? Mm-hmm. I mean, life that day all of a sudden just gets way better right then. Mm-hmm. Well, why wouldn't we habitually do it then, pray tell? If we know that that's what it feels like and what it is like, well, why not just make that a practice of life? Get it out of the way. I'm preaching to this guy right here because I know how to make the excuses for not doing what I know should happen right now. Trying to get an interview with a couple people right now that I know they're not going to be fun interviews. I know they're not. Okay? And they know it's not. So, you know, I email them and say, well, when will it suit you? They email back, I'm busy this week. They're busy. Okay, that's good. Is it? No, yeah, I keep pushing you. Well, okay, so give me a day then next week. Tell me an evening when it's going to suit you. Okay, well, that goes totally against my grain just to keep pushing at it. Okay, so if I can't get that interview this week, I want to know when it's going to happen next week. Okay, that's what I mean by putting first things first. In just the knit and grit of it. Okay, and that's the habit will stand you in very, very good stead as a teacher or just in life in general. If you can learn to arrange not only the big things I'm pointing out, but the small things, the daily affairs, of actually arrange them and then follow through in that fashion. Second, maintain margin. I'm giving you some of the things that are really, really hard lessons for me to learn, okay? more than often that somebody called me on the phone, I'll be talking to them for a little bit, and they'll say, well, you think you may be able to come down for a weekend or over for a weekend or whatever? And yeah, I think so. And I hang up, and Sheila says, yeah, now Mr. Lehman, I have a question for you. And pray tell, when are you going to do that? Or when are you going to it irritates me, but it's the right question. Because here's the thing. There actually, if you looked at my calendar, there's space for it. There's space on the calendar, but is there space in your heart and in your emotional reserve? And is there space there? That's what I mean by margin. Very difficult lesson for me to learn. And I still break it. I still don't do too well with it. But in general, I've learned to ask Sheila's question before she asks it. And when are you going to do that? But I've added the piece, and where are you going to get the energy for it? The emotional energy, the time, the preparation energy, all that is going to be needed to actually do that and feel good about what you've done. Okay? Keep some margin on the page. A strong recommendation I would give to you. Here's one that might not strike you as important to begin with, but I found a very developed physical stamina. In this room, there are varying levels of stamina. Some of you probably can survive on 5 hours of sleep, or 6 or 7. Some I need 9 hours of sleep. I, for years, did with 6 hours of sleep. That day no longer exists. God, I need more than that for the physical stamina to run well during the day, to have the kind of attitude and the kind of alertness and all of that is required of a teacher. Okay? And so when I say develop physical stamina, of course, just your old standbys there, your diet, rest, exercise, diet. The margin problem and then just filling up days and then burning the candle at both ends, which is really the reason why about 55, all of a sudden I was out of energy. Okay, just did no margin. Okay, and fatigue, long-term fatigue sets in. Now, mind you, being tired for a day or so never hurt anybody. That's probably, well, I don't, maybe it did, but that's generally a good thing to push yourself to limits. I don't have issues with that. But what I have found is long-term fatigue will get you down. It's ruinous. So you need rest, physical exercise, so forth and so on. I already told you I do some long-distance running, and that's probably, it's health, and it invigorates. Okay, it doesn't take away. There's a saying, I always hesitate to say it because it sounds wrong, before spiritual stamina is physical stamina. There's a sense in which that's not true. There's a sense in which it is true. Did you ever get up so tired you can't pray? Well, I have. it would seems to me as though one had better get the rest and get the physical stamina that is required to pray well. So there's a sense in which it is true before spiritual stamina is physical stamina. Of course, it needs to be taken with a grain of salt. Pursue relational balance. I think you know this. Relationships are consuming. Those of you who have taught for very long at all, or you don't even have to have taught very long, it's not hard to run into people who make big demands on you relationally. And of course, most of us who have any sensitivity at all feel badly about, I don't know, pushing them off or in some way or another just trying to avoid, let's say, the relationship. Well, we ought to have that kind of sensitivity. But we also ought to, it helped me to one day be aware that God did not expect me to solve the world's problems. He gave me a few to pay attention to, but not the whole world. And I began to immediately, when somebody would call me and say, can you help with so-and-so and so, my first question to myself internally is, am I the right person to help over here or here? Right now, as I'm speaking to you, I have a phone call or so to make along these lines. And the phone call really is to find out, am I the person to help here or not? Who maybe can help a little bit? Relational balance, you need people who, particularly here, you need input. Okay? And a good question to ask yourself is, who am I getting input from? When I'm done with the conversation with Sally, why do I feel invigorated? You need some of those kinds of relationships. Okay, where you need to be a person who can offer that to others, of course. Okay, so by relational balance, what I mean here is be careful about consuming relationships wherever they're at and maintain a well-rounded thing here. I'm a bit of an academic. I'm here at Faith Builders and so forth and so on. But I love, Sheila's really good on this too. She loves the neighbors and she makes connections there. My next door neighbor, I doubt he would know what, I know he never heard of Felix Mons for sure. And a whole lot of other things he wouldn't know that I think I know. But he's a Vietnam War vet. I love to just go over to the fence and talk to him over the fence. That's a relationship that has nothing to do with school, period. With the exception now and then, I tell a story or so about George Salzgiver that George has told me, as a Vietnam War vet or whatever. So that's kind of way outside the boundaries, but it's a relationship I have. I have balanced relationships. And again, we could spend time with it, but I need to keep going here. Create space for a hobby. Useful hobbies, but even hobbies that are not useful. Just something that you enjoy doing. I carve a little bit. My problem is I have way too many hobbies, but I try to knock a few of them out. I like to farm, and that can really get you into trouble. Read strategically. What I mean by read strategically, I don't think that every book that one reads has to be checked. About missionaries or whatever. But I have found it far more important to select a few books that over the next year I am going to read, rather than to randomly have, that sounds like a good book, and read that thing, and I get about three chapters in, and that's, what am I reading this book for anyway? What help is it? You didn't hear me saying that there's, a good novel can be refreshing. I don't have anything against that type of thing. But read strategically. Actually think about what you're reading. One of my habits is to read a college-level text on at least one of the subjects that I am teaching every year. And I do that as a parallel. I just have it at my desk. I don't read it word for word. But I have it there. It's one that I'm working on, right? So here I am teaching this course in, I used to teach biology, say in genetics or whatever. Well, I'll just read in that book a little bit. All year long, I just keep parallel reading along. That's strategic reading because I'm teaching this. I'm learning along the way. But I'm not binding myself so tight to it that it consumes me. Okay? Read strategically and write strategically. Write often. I hate writing. It's the most difficult work I do. Okay, but I know something. When I write, I learn. I sort things out. The pieces have to come together reasonably well, or I get stuck. I've written some of the Kingdom of God. For the last 10 years, Steve Brubaker has wanted me to print something, publish something on the Kingdom of God. I keep saying, I got stuck. Now, I won't tell you where I got stuck, but I got stuck at a place that I didn't know what to do with it. I kind of got unstuck, but I still didn't publish anything. So, write. That's a good thing to do. Attitude habits, positive expectations come straight from first days of school. If you've read that one, text that we use here. First days of school, positive expectations. I can't think of an attitude habit that is more powerful in the classroom than an upbeat, positive attitude about life and about what's happening here in the classroom. I've talked with some really good teachers. They knew way more than I will ever know, but they did not do well with students. The primary reason that they did not do well with students, two of them, the primary reasons, I'll give you two. The one was just lack of negativity, just a generally negative spirit, a negative attitude about things, which translated into students not being sure if they love them or not. I've always said this, if students know that you love them, you can make a lot of mistakes and they'll forgive you almost every time. But if they suspect you don't, or if they kind of suspicion it, you make one or two mistakes, you're done. It's not fair. I didn't say that was fair, but that's what happens. So bring positive expectations in. You say, what if I just can't bring it up? Well, try. Keep trying. Positive expectations, absolute must. Collaboration, not adversarial. An attitude of collaboration. We are in this together. Okay? I told this story in the last meeting. I'll tell it here. I had a student a number of years ago who he did not want to be in school. His dad wanted him to be in school. I think it was at the end of ninth grade. He said he was going to quit. His dad said, no, you're not going to quit. So he came back to school in 10th grade. Came to school, and I knew that this was going to be a little bit of an issue. So I sat down with him. I think it was either the first or second day. Probably second day, because you know that first day is the way it is. Second day of school. I'll call him Johnny. It wasn't his name. I said, you know, Johnny, look, you and I have had some discussions the end of last year. And your dad was here, and we talked through a few things. And I think we know where we're at, right? Yep. I said, okay, you're going to be here 180 days, best I can tell. And Lord willing, so am I. Now, I have a question for you. Should we just beat each other's brains out for the next 180 days? You fight me, and I fight you. And we're just all over the map trying to figure out who can get on top of things here, you know, or what. Does that make any sense? If you're going to be here, I'm going to be here. We both know that. What's the point? Why don't we just decide right now that we're going to find a way to have a good year, and we're going to finish well. You let me know when things aren't kind of the way they should be, and I'll let you know. But can we decide that? He said, you know, that might not be a bad idea. But we had a good year. It wasn't outstanding. He did not come back at 11th grade. It wasn't one of those kinds of stories, you know, that everything comes out hunky-dory. It wasn't that. But we had a reasonably good year because we decided we're going to collaborate. We're not going to be adversaries this year. Avoid adversarial relationships like the plague, whether it be a student or whether it be a teacher or whoever, a fellow teacher, whoever. Just stay out of them. I know. Can't always, but it's always. Academic training is work. This is an attitude. I take it that most of you have taught a couple of years, maybe. If you're teaching because you don't like to work, get out of it right now. Because it's work. Okay? But work is to be a joy. Another big laugh on Sheila and me. I like to farm a little bit, so I don't know. I think it was last summer, the summer before I came in all sweated and came in for lunch and sat down. I didn't sit down. I'm standing there drenched. She looked at me and she said, my dear husband, I sure hope that there's work in heaven, because if there isn't, you're not going to like it there. Oh, my. I think one can train themselves a little bit to actually enjoy it. In fact, if you don't enjoy your work, it's a good thing to find something else to do. Okay? Fourth, perseverance. Resolute times of testing speaks for itself. Because you all know this doesn't all go perfectly. These are attitude habits. An attitude of perseverance. I will finish this. I will complete it. I might not complete it today, nor tomorrow, nor when I wanted to, but I'm going to complete it. I will persevere. And the fifth one, I hope it's understood. I'm in charge here, and I accept that responsibility. That actually is an attitude. The responsibility piece in particular. So I have been hired to do this job. I take that. I am in charge here, and I will do it responsibly. Okay, we have 5 minutes, and I would like to hear from you. Let's see, what do I have here? Hear from you. First of all, the top habit that has helped you. Nothing's wrong here. You can't be out of bounds. Top habit that has helped you.
I don't know if I would call this also have it individually, but as teachers, we get together for prayer every week.
There you go.
Form relationships with each other, make sure our lines of communication are open, and praying for specific needs at school.
That's excellent. A category I haven't even touched on, but the group spirit of the staff. Very, 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 very important. You're giving a piece of it here. I have a getting together, comparing a few ideas, praying together. Excellent. Who else?
This isn't my problem, but journaling has helped a lot. And one year I actually did a school journal, like after school. Only 1 year, I wish I would have done it more, but that really helped me think about some of my students.
Excellent. So every day you journaled on the...
Pretty much every day that year.
On the school day?
Often. Yeah. Yep. It helped me see something that it's going
to excellent. I do it often. I can't say it's a habit, but I do it often. Very good. You awesome.
I remember something I heard one year here at teachers' meeting about distractions on top of the desk. And I like to make a habit of keeping things that are going to distract me from my work away from my desk.
There's an organizational one. I'm afraid you might have heard that from me. I don't know, because this is an issue. This is an issue. Keep that desk clean. Good. Excellent. Who else?
I refuse to look at my phone during school, and it's an emergency that I call school
for. Uh-huh. Very good. The whole day, you don't look at your phone.
Generally, unless I'm expecting a call, like an appointment.
Sure. I'm totally on board there. The issue for me is if... I don't want to get off on it. What else?
I try not to work at school too much on Saturday.
Uh-huh. I don't work at all on Saturday.
Because I can't always quite manage it, but I burned myself out one school term pretty badly and wasn't even sure if I was going to go back into teaching, and I felt like a big part of that was because I did nothing but school.
Oh, thank you very much for saying so. Yeah, don't ask me what you do if you feel like there's just so much work here that I can't get it all done, but I wouldn't do it. You minimize it on Saturdays, I hear you say. Excellent.
Take that a step further. I try not to take any schoolwork home. Yeah. I know it's not always possible, but I try really, really hard.
That's cool. I was married when I first started to teach, and we had two children, and then soon we had twins and four children. I took books home every night in a box, but I absolutely refused to work on them between when I got home and the next morning. I got up early in the morning when everybody else was sleeping. But I would not do it. Have some rules like that for yourself. Habits. Others? All right. Well, excellent. The main thing I want you to remember is the bridge. Okay? And the fact in work, if you have an assignment for this year, choose a habit that I had you think about just for 30 seconds there. Early on, choose a habit that is not currently a habit, but you want it to be. And ask yourself the question, how am I going to get across the bridge from ideals to it's actually become something that I habitually do? And if you can get that done, you got the point of this session here together. Have a very good day. And thank you for coming.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.